You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone, and you're all very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 2, Episode 18, Kieran Burke and John Breyer in studio. And we have so much to run through tonight, John. European draws, league games in the Premier, the First Division, talking points about St. Pat's new stadium. So much to get through tonight.
Loads to get through. We've got some great guests on as well this week, Kieran. And I'm really looking forward to speaking to Ger O'Brien because, you know, there's that development there at Inchcore and there's... Well, it's been overturned, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, look, we won't touch too much on it because, as you said, we do speak to Ger O'Brien later in the show. But just from your own personal point of view, the St. Pat's plan, for me, it didn't look overambitious. It didn't look to be unrealistic. I thought it was a great, not just for the football club development, but a huge development for the community. I think everybody from the Dublin area and around other areas too know that Inchicore needs investment, it needs redevelopment. And this new plan doesn't seem to be the answer to that. You're just going to be putting more people into a community that's already lacking resources, where St. Pat's were going to build a whole new hub for that community with more houses than the current plan. It's been disapproved.
Yeah, I'm not so sure why, to be honest, Kieran, and I don't want to particularly speculate on it, but it'd be great to get Ger's opinion on it. And like I say, the plan looked excellent.
Yeah,
because you've got transport facilities in there and everything, Kieran. So
there seem to be a couple of people that claim to be fans of that club as well that are in political seats, let's just say, who seemed against it from the outset. So I think two words to sum it up: Irish politics.
Kieran, I've seen politicians turn up to Longford Town matches when it suits them.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen that before.
But I seem to remember one being on top of the Shaw's podium presenting the team with the trophy in 2014.
Yeah.
Hadn't seen him at a game before then, haven't seen him since. Probably won't see him again unless Longford win something.
This is the way politics goes, but you know, that's by the by. It's a shame it's not going through, but I don't think all hope is dead yet on that one, so we'll talk to Ger about it. Looking forward to speaking to Aid Durvin as well tonight.
Yeah, local Longford lad. Very interesting chat with him yesterday. We pre-recorded that one as Longford obviously train on a Wednesday night. We spoke about the challenges of a Longford-based player playing for Longford Towns. It may seem strange saying that because the fans have been calling out for years for more local players, but with some interesting comments, some fair points, and we'll air that one for you later. And finally, our other interview is with Barry Davey. He's a Derry City supporter, and we're going to have a very good chat with him about Kenny Shields, about the European fiasco, the ticketing, and all the issues surrounding Derry at the moment, especially that leaky back four.
Should be a cracker.
Look, we'll crack straight into the European results, John. Dundalk with a 2-1 win over Levita Tallinn, putting them through to the next round. They, of course, play AE Carolanica, the Cypriot team, tomorrow night, and we'll preview that one shortly. But let's run through this result. A fine win for Dundalk.
Yeah, well, we're down to Europa League action, unfortunately, at this early stage of the season. We've no interest left in the Champions League. But Dundalk flying the flag in Europe, as they have done recently for us. Did the hard work in the first leg and certainly gave himself a bit of comfort with an early goal after Pat Hooban. He shot the keeper early after a defensive error, but he made no mistake with a header to make it 1-0, Kieran.
Great cross from Sean Gannon out wide as well, and a beautiful diving header from Hooban. He seemed to catch the goalkeeper by surprise. Great way to start the game. But for me, John, I didn't think this was Dundalk's best performance, particularly in the first half. I thought they played a very slow style of football, unlike themselves.
Yeah, I think they probably realised that they got the bulk of the tie won in the first leg.
I think so. So
that you could probably put it down to that. You were at the match, and you were a witness to an absolutely sensational second.
I was right in line with Michael Duffy's shot, volley off the left foot, brilliant ball from deep by McGrath. I was like, he's not shooting from here. He has to pull this back. He has to take this down. He hits it, and before the keeper can even raise his hands, it's in the top corner of the net. One of the best goals I've ever seen live, John.
That ball from Jamie McGrath, though.
Brilliant, yeah. And you, as you said on the show last week, a player that's coming into his own more and more by the week.
Yeah, Videlko made things slightly interesting before he pulled one back before half time to make it 2-1. Dundalk still with a good advantage, and weren't too stretched second half.
No, well, John, I'll tell you, the highlights didn't show that, but as I said, I was at the game, and it was a very, very nervy atmosphere in the second half. Levita Talon did put pressure on. They were a good side, and I think the Dundalk supporters showed a lot of respect to them at the end of the game. The Talon players came over, applauded the shed. Their fans stayed back to do likewise. It was a good performance from this team. They'll be one to watch for future European draws, but I think every Dundalk supporter knows the Lilywhites will massively have to up their game for tomorrow night's game against Larnaca.
Rovers went to AIK Solner, having gone down by one goal in the first leg, but they were given hope early on with Dan Carr getting an opener.
Yeah, he's a player that's starting to chip in with them goals more and more now.
Good celebration as well.
Good celebration as well. Look, in terms of unlucky results, I think this has to go down as one of the most unlucky in recent years in terms of a League of Ireland club in Europe.
Yeah, they could have gone 2-0 up. There was an awful back pass. I don't know if you saw the highlights, Kieran.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Strange shot didn't make it to the net, unfortunately. But like you say, so unlucky. 3 minutes to go. Aaron Green, perfect, absolute pinpoint cross. Mm. Perfect header. Hits the post and out.
Yeah,
that's the fine lines, isn't
it? Between that and the Cool Strange chance, then... Oh, they've got to be kicking themselves, but it was a brave effort from Rovers.
It was.
You'd like to see them now carry those European performances into the league setting.
They were a bit unlucky to concede that goal as well. You know, it was a lovely through ball, I have to say. Mm. But Bazuna was a bit unlucky. He got something on the shot.
Did, yeah.
And unfortunately ricocheted into the net to end Rovers' dreams in Europe for another season. But, you know, they did pretty well second leg, I have to say. Yeah. They did a lot better than we thought they did.
Impressed. But in terms of unlucky as well, Derry go and win away in Mince, John, 2-1, but it's not enough in the end.
No, damage done in the first leg. Like I say, looking forward to speaking to Barry Davey about the first leg, the attendance, all that kind. We covered that in detail last week. One man, forgotten man at Sligo, Ali Roy opened the scoring to make it 1-0.
What a transformation here. He seems to be playing in a striker's position at Derry, whereas I think Gerard Little seemed to view him more as a number 10. Didn't get much of a chance at the showgrounds, but he seems to have found his form again under Kenny Shields.
The defensive frailties came back to haunt them when they failed to clear a free kick, and that led to the equaliser. But Derry gave themselves just that glimmer of hope. Mm. And you know, when Roy played in Hale to make it 2-1, that's as good as it got, unfortunately, for Derry. But, I mean, you've got to say that's a great result, but such a shame about the first leg.
Yeah, I know you just mentioned it there, the first leg. But for me, it comes back to that defensive error in the second leg. They failed to clear a set piece. It should have been easily cleared. They had several opportunities to get rid of the ball. Couldn't do it. They're punished, and they're out of Europe because of that. And look, a man that will tell us more about that European tie and all the furore, I think is the only way to describe it, John, surrounding it, the ticketing fiasco, a couple of comments from the board, a couple of comments from Kenny Shields. It's really starting to heat up down there. So we're going to speak now to Derry City FC fan Barry Davey. We are joined on the line now by a Derry City FC supporter. It's Barry Davey. Barry, you're welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
All right, lads, how are you keeping?
Barry, defensively, Derry City in recent weeks, it's been, something we've brought up week after week on the show here, John. Can't seem to keep a clean sheet, and a heavy defeat once again on Monday, this time against Cork. Obviously, there was the travel issues. Kenny Shield mentioned it, but I was listening to his comments before the game, and he said that travel and tiredness wouldn't be allowed to come into the players' minds. The minute the full-time whistle went, Kenny was... bashing, I suppose, the FEI's decision making in terms of fixtures. What did you make of the whole furore around the game?
Well, for a start, defensive issues have been a nightmare for us this season. We couldn't defend a fish supper. For Kenny to come out and say totally contradict himself, which is unlike the man, not really. It's hilarious, but it's sad at the same time. Like, Cork have had to travel, Shamrock Rovers have had to travel. They're not coming out with these inane statements. They're not coming out with these rants. They're just getting on with their game and they're winning games, and that's exactly what we should be doing, and we're not.
Does it come down to resources? Are Derry at this moment in time, do you feel they're overachieving, underachieving? Are they where they should be? We're talking about the likes of Rovers, Dundalk, Cork there, but obviously far bigger resources. Derry have a couple of good players on their side, but they struggle to keep their best players, and I think that's what it's always going to come down to at Derry City.
Well, lads, the reality is we were given an extra £180,000, or Kenny Shields rather was given an extra £180,000 on top of the already huge bank that he had to play with at the beginning of the season and bring players in. We've had fairly decent resources. We've got one of the richest men in Ireland back in the club. All right, he's not going to throw money hand over fist at us, but to say that we don't have the same resources as the likes of Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers and Cork, we may not have the same amount of numbers coming out and supporting us every week, but we definitely do have the money. I don't see that being an issue. I see it as a number of very poor signings that Kenny has made over the past two seasons being the issue. I mean, there was a stat going around the town not that long ago that Kenny had allegedly signed 40 players inside 2 years. That's frightening.
Looking, just going back to that that European tie against Minsk, you're saying about the healthy cash situation at the club and things like that. Would you be critical of the board's decision there to price a lot of supporters out? And, you know, I think with a full house there at the Brandywell in the first league, it could have been a completely different story into the next round and probably another 250 grand in the bank accounts.
You're 100% correct, John. There was a whole furore around the town. Again, Derry in itself, Derry as a place, would be predominantly working class. We've got one of the lowest rates of income throughout the entirety of the UK and indeed Ireland as well. People can't afford £25 to go and watch Derry City Football Club. It's as simple as that. And to say that it was the fans' fault for not turning out, well, you give us a price that we can afford, we'll turn out. We were doing it at the beginning of the season when it was £14 a ticket, roughly equates to €15. Last season we did have, and the season before in the Brandywell, it was last season in McGinn Park and the season before in the Brandywell, we did have the lowest prices in the league where we were charging, I think it was £12 for an adult to go to the game, which is perfectly fitting with the ethic in the city itself, that it is a working class town. £25 was a stretch too far. It showed in the stadium, and it obviously affected the players. That Dinamo Minsk team, they weren't all that impressive. Even in the first leg when they beat us 2-0, they weren't great. I think it was just a combination of our defence being poor, and them taking advantage of that and the fact that the stadium was absolutely empty.
I have to say, Barry, I thought the comments that was the supporters that couldn't turn out, I wouldn't say they wouldn't turn out, they couldn't turn out, they couldn't afford it, that it was their fault. I thought those comments were disgraceful, and Kenny Shields seems to have, he's thrown out a couple of comments in recent days. Perhaps he's doing the board's bidding, we don't know. But in the long run, is this going to have a knock-on effect going forward in the league and the cup games? Can we expect to see attendances now take a dip maybe at the Brandywell?
The comments that were made, firstly by Philip O'Doherty, the chairman of the club. Now, I've never had a problem with Philip O'Doherty. He's a great man and he's done massive favours for us. If it wasn't for Philip O'Doherty, there wouldn't be a Derry City Football Club right now, and that's just a fact. But his comments were very ill-informed. They were borderline crazy. They were stupid. There's no if, but, or maybe about it. In plain black and white, it was just pure stupidity. I don't want to seem as if I'm having a go at the system that's in place at Derry City Football Club, but they really need to change it up. Otherwise, they're just going to lose a multitude of fans that have been going for generations, really. I spoke to many, many people. In fact, it was myself and the group of lads that I go to the games with that pulled out the banner saying, we're not boycotting, we're just working class. That really struck a nerve with the board, but the majority of the fans were on our side with it. We seen very little criticism over it. The only real criticism came from the board itself. Now, for Kenny to get involved in off-the-field matters, whether he was pushed to it or not, it's very, very silly. And a man who was losing an awful lot of support because of the signings that he made, he's losing an awful lot of more support because of the comments that he made. I personally, at the beginning of the season, you would have said that I was the biggest Kenny Shields fan in the city, but that's very slowly changing.
Can I ask you then, in terms of the recent form, the recent results, everything else going on around the club, is there now pressure, genuine pressure on Kenny Shields for maybe the first time in his reign at Derry?
Well, a lot of people have Chapman saying, you know, Kenny out and Shields out and so on and so forth, I think that I don't think that's the way forward. Sacking football managers is not the way forward, no matter how poorly they're doing. You give it to them to the end of the season, see how they get on, unless you're in dire straits, like we were under Peter Hutton. We're not in dire straits. We're sitting floundering in the middle of the table. We should be doing better with the players that we've got and with the resources that we have. We're sitting in a League Cup semi-final on the 6th of August. We still got the FAI Cup to look forward to. And European football, like, it's not insurmountable. You're guaranteed that maybe one of the top four is getting to the FAI Cup final. So the first four teams in the league are gonna be playing European football. That's still, it's achievable. But Derry City need to do something seriously drastic. Kenny Shields needs to do something seriously drastic.
Just finally from me, one thing he seems to have got right is the signing of Ali Roy. He was nearly frozen out at Sligo. He wasn't getting a look in. He signed for Derry, and yeah, he started with a real bang, hasn't he, for you?
Yeah, I think it was the third game of the season. We played Sligo Rovers in the Sligo Showgrounds. It was a fixture that was reversed. Ali Roy played an absolute stormer, and he had played great games against us, but he just, I don't know what was happening down the road there. It's absolutely fantastic that he signed for us. And questions were asked and eyebrows were raised by people that hadn't seen him play, but it's a fantastic signing. And himself and Aaron Splane and the other lad, I think he came in from Hearts, or he came from Scotland anyway. They've reignited that passion within the team, it seems. The only problem we have is at the back, with the likes of Dan Seaborn coming in again. Player came out of the unknown for myself anyway. He's been solid at the back. I just think that we need to work out our centre-half partnership. At the beginning of the season, we had Owen Toole playing centre-half while Gavin Pearce was unfit. And for a lad that's only 20, 21 years of age, he was playing like a veteran. He's just a superstar player. Himself and Darren Cole linked up very well. I don't know what happened there. Once we get the defensive issues sorted out, we can kick on, and we should kick on. Ideally, it would have been brilliant after that fantastic result away in Europe to kick on, but it just wasn't to be. I'm not taking having to travel as an excuse, though. That's a complete cop-out.
Well, Barry, I think you've been a fine example of why we love fan interviews here on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Thanks for that fantastic insight into the situation at Derry at the moment, and we want to wish you the best for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, lads. Take it easy.
Cheers, Barry.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
So, John, we're going to speak about the European draw in a moment, but obviously, as we've mentioned a couple of times already, a huge game for Dundalk Football Club tomorrow night in Oriel Park as AEK Larnaca. It's hard to get it off that tongue. They travel to Oriel, and it's a huge first leg.
Yeah, and it's a step up in quality, Larnaca. They're a good side. Spanish internationals in that season?
No, Spanish internationals, La Liga
players in there. There's plenty of experience, and
there is internationals in that side, but the good news is a lot of them, I think four or five, have been declared injured for tomorrow night, so that's a big boost to Dundalk already.
Well, that's super news, to be honest. We all want the teams to do well in Europe, and you know, for Larnaca to be coming with a bit of an injury crisis is really, really good news, because they're a strong side, and I think it would be a coin toss otherwise.
Yeah, for me, usually when you're looking at European games, you're always looking for that second leg to come at home, but I think this is a rare tie where you're actually better to play at home if you're in Dundalk shoes for the first leg. We all know the heat, how badly it hit Cork City over there last year when they played Larnaca. Dundalk, if they can get a 1 or especially a 2-0 win in this first leg, bring that over there. We've seen the professional performance they put in over in Tallinn. I think they can do the same against Larnaca. For me, I think Dundalk win this tie, but it won't be easy, but I would make them favourites.
Yeah, what they can't do is go behind in going into the second leg, because we've seen already with Rovers, with Derry, you know, if you are behind in a tie, it's very, very difficult to claw it back away from home. You can play well, give yourself a chance, but have we seen it's very difficult to win once you're down from your home leg. So, you know, they certainly don't want to be a goal or two down at that. But I don't think they will be, Kieran. I think they'll be okay first leg. I expect the big name players to step up. I think they'll be going to Larnaca with an advantage, and hopefully that will be enough to get them through.
I think a clean sheet in this first leg is crucial. Dundalk showed a couple of unfamiliar defensive frailties in that first leg. But I think, as you mentioned, they probably knew they had the bulk of the work done. I think I was going to say Kenny Shields there. Stephen Kenny is going to be drilling into his players and Vinnie Perthuren the importance of keeping concentration in these European games. I'm sure the players themselves, they've been there, they've done that, they know this. If they can get a 1 or, as I said, a 2-0 would be great. I think they go through.
Kieran, we'll talk about the draw now. They got an absolute stinker, I'm afraid. Ajax or Sturm Graz, two ex-giants of European football, certainly Ajax, but remember Sturm Graz in Champions League group stages, good outfit, Austrian side, but Ajax would be an amazing experience. I've been to the Ajax Arena. It's fantastic, Kieran.
I mean, Tallinn were a good side. Larnaca step up again in terms of their resources. You're talking into a totally different sphere now with these two clubs, especially Ajax.
You're going off the scale compared to the other two.
But we have to remember this, not this the dark side, but some of the players were involved. They went to Holland against Alkmaar and they got a famous draw. This Dundalk side has thrilled everyone in European football. I wouldn't write them off against most opposition. Obviously, there's another step up again from Ajax, which is scary to think. But for me, Dundalk have the ability to win through these ties. Look, Ajax would probably have too much for them in Holland. But in Oriel Park, it's a tight ground. It's an intimidating atmosphere. You never know what's going to happen. We just hope to get through this tie against Larnaca because it would be just such an event to see them playing either of these two sides.
Yeah, I think you'd obviously give them a better chance against Sturm Graz, but you know, I think Ajax would be too strong for them, Kieran. But you know, that's the unfortunate thing about the Europa League, and it's so hard to get through unless you get a drop down from the Champions League to put you automatically in that third round.
The way things are going at the minute in terms of Dundalk, if they can get a couple of more wins, even in this next tie now against Larnaca, it's looking very likely they could be seeded in the Champions League next year. Should they win the League of Ireland this year, that's going to be huge. It would help them avoid ties like this. I think for the Irish clubs, that coefficient is going to be crucial. This is why the results for the likes of Rovers and Derry are a great boost to that as well. So let's hope Dundalk can get through this tie against Larnaca and set up what would be an absolutely mouth-watering occasion.
Yeah, and it is the way that the draws are structured as well. I'm going to have a little rant here because it does favour the bigger countries, you know, with the higher coefficients like Spain, England. They would have 4 teams actually in the group stages. You know, they don't have to pre-qualify or anything like that. So, you know, it is difficult. But then again, they have given that step down to the Europa League for more teams.
But they did make it harder, so they're kind of just throwing out a bone to keep the smaller clubs happy while the bigger clubs make more and more money.
Look, we'll move on. Cork. Well, what a mouth-watering potential tie they have.
We're talking about Dundalk having a mouth-watering tie. Celtic could be coming to Turner's Cross, and before anyone even says it, that's exactly where that game should be if that's what's to happen. We don't want to see it move to the Aviva. We don't want to see it moved anywhere else. Fill that place out with Cork City fans, give Celtic the minimum tickets, and get behind the actual Irish side.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not going to go into Irish and British sides or anything like that because I'll just get pelters, Kieran. But I do actually think Celtic will have too much for Rosenberg. So it's more likely to be Rosenberg. Celtic got through their first qualifying round very easily against Ashurst, I think it was.
And Rosenberg without a manager at the moment too. So, but I was listening to a report there online earlier and they were saying the players want that manager reinstated. So there's a bit of in the air stuff going on there. Mm. So that could fall into Celtic's hands too, you'd imagine.
Yeah. As I say, I think Celtic will have too much for them over the two legs. So it's more likely to be Rosenberg from my opinion, Kieran. In which case,
well, we've seen plenty of them in recent times.
Yeah, and again, I think either of those two teams would have too much for Cork. But one thing John Caulfield has to do is change his style of football.
Yeah, we gave John Caulfield a bit of a hard time on the show here last week. We were very, very disappointed with the approach, especially in that second leg against Legia Warsaw. For me, I think Rosenberg will have far too much. But if Cork sit back like they did against Legia, then that Rosenberg team will absolutely steamroll them. We don't want to see results like that.
Can't see Cork start against Rosenberg or Celtic with the likes of Cummins and Sadler on the bench. Mm. It just makes no sense. So hopefully Caulfield's realised his mistake there and he goes and plays his strongest team.
It all comes down to the seeding again, though, really, doesn't it? Cork conceded, get one of these big sides. These Irish clubs, just they need to start picking up results on a consistent basis, get the league's coefficient up there, and hopefully we'll get kinder ties, because in the last couple of years, we've been very, very unlucky in Europe.
Yeah, I was speaking to somebody today about how much money is in the Scottish Premiership, how little money, he was saying, and how little money there is for the league winners. And I was telling him how much the league winners got in the League of Ireland, and he just couldn't believe.
At least they have a proper TV deal over there as well, and it's just a different, and the attendance as well, it's just a different level altogether.
I think we've ranted enough about that in the past, Kieran.
Look, I think we've covered all the European aspects of everything there. We'll move on now, John, to speak about the Premier Division results from the weekend. As we said, folks, we have interviews coming up with A. Durbin from Longford and Ger O'Brien from St. Pat's. But we'll start at the RSC, a Sunday kickoff. Waterford losing out 1-0 to Shamrock Rovers. Our good friend Gary Shaw back on the scene.
Yeah, it was good to see a forgotten man, really. And rumours were that he was nearly out of...
Been linked with Cork, actually, which was a strange one for me. But a fantastic diving header, something we've seen him do many times for Longford down the years.
I think it was linked with a move north of the border as well.
Apparently turned down a move, yeah.
Yeah, so... But good job he did for Rovers, because they won that one 1-0, as I predicted, Kieran. Roberto Lopez, he missed a great chance early on. Typical centre-back type of finish for him. But... We also saw the return of Alan Manus in goals, and he saved very well. He made a couple of great saves, actually, but he saved well early on from Courtney Doofus. And
ended his career at Rovers last time with a clean sheet, comes back and gets a clean sheet. So
yeah, and he made an absolute terrific double save in the second half. Did you see?
Superb.
Yeah, but Rovers scored through, as we said, forgotten man Gary Shaw, trademark Gary Shaw header to make it 1-0. Waterford did have the chance to equalise. But again, Akinade, he hit the post and shot a chance for a second, but the keeper saved. So
some burst of speed from him for that run where he made that chance. He probably should have done better with the finish, but I think he was just knackered after that run.
I'd say so, yeah, because he ended up with the keeper on top of him, really, didn't he? Smothering the shot. But yeah, really good win for Rovers, and that brings the gap to 4 points between the two European hopefuls.
I have to say, I thought Waterford were very unlucky. I thought it was another good performance, and the likes of Akinade and Doofus missed a couple of good chances there. The ball just wouldn't seem to go in, and that's just one of them days. Love to get your thoughts on the Doofus incident where he went down in the area. For me, it didn't look like a penalty. It actually looked like free out. It looked like he barged the Rovers man.
Yeah, he went straight into it, didn't he? It was it was definitely not a penalty, Kieran.
No, we'll move along to the next one, John. A great come from behind win for St. Pat's. They end that 7 winless streak, or a losing streak in the league, I should say, and Conan Byrne with a double off the bench.
Yeah, superb run from Carlo Sullivan early on, and that led to the corner, which I suppose the penalty incident where Barry Maguire won the penalty from Killian Brennan challenge, Kieran. Penalty, definitely?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, Billy Danahy scored that 1-0. Will Fitzgerald nearly made it 2, actually, but he shot against goal. Lee Desmond forced a decent save from Tommy Holland. I haven't seen too much of him before. Looks okay.
Yeah, and luckily for Jack Brady, it seems Tommy Holland's in very, very good form, so it's hard to see Jack end looking there.
And Dean Clark unable to score with Holland blocking the follow-up. But it was all down to the subs made for Pats, double substitution there, and it was Conan Byrne off the bench. He won a penalty, which he duly converted. And then he scored with a lovely header from pinpoint cross from Simon Madden to make it 2-1.
Big decision to leave a man like Conan Byrne on the bench. Such an experienced campaigner, and he started the season like a house on fire. Had that little lull in the middle of the season, but the entire Pats team have, in fairness. You can't blame one man for a 7-match losing streak, and he certainly proved the point with that impact off the bench.
But you know, they had to change something, because they've gone on that long with such a losing streak. And to be fair, yeah, Limerick should have got a point, because Cantwell hit the bar and the ball ended up in the net, but it was an offside call.
Never offside.
I thought they were very unlucky, Limerick.
First half, I thought Limerick were absolutely superb. Barry Maguire in midfield seemed to control things, but second half, they didn't seem to have the same intensity about them. Maybe all the off-field issues there, maybe just affecting the players a little bit. Pats hit them, but as you mentioned, they're very unlucky not to get something in the end.
Yeah, no, good performance from Limerick to say that
if they continue
lost,
like that for the remainder of the season, you'd have no worries about them, and you might be looking at the likes of Sligo and
Sligo being pulled down, yeah. Bose played Bray, Kieran. What was your prediction on this one?
Doesn't matter.
It does matter, yeah. Can you remember?
Yeah, you told me never back Bray, and I didn't listen, and it's 6-0 to both.
Yeah. Terrible from you, that. But
6-1 now in the prediction stakes, too.
It was a match that the guy we interviewed last week will want to forget pretty quickly, Reece Gorman, because he opened the scoring was opened by Bowes with a really bad back header, Kieran. A
couple of really bad mistakes from Reece.
Yeah. Daniel Kelly nicked in to open the scoring. I'll tell you who had a great game, the Bray keeper.
Yeah, Evermore, and he's been very impressive this season for such a young player in such a hectic circumstances down there at Bray.
Yeah, Kelly made a good save from Kelly, but he made it 2-0, putting his old club to the sword. And it was a penalty from Dinny Corcoran, made it 3. Kevin Devaney 4. More defensive disasters.
A good strike by Devaney.
Yeah, indeed. It really could have been 6 or 7 at half time.
Yeah, it could have been 13-14 overall, John. As you mentioned, only for more, and it would have been an absolutely scandalous scoreline.
Well, second half, after Rob Cornwell scored from a corner, he actually saved the penalty from Dinny Corcoran. 6-0, Magerson scored. It could have been 10. He was my man of the match, Bray goalkeeper, which just says it all.
Yeah, it's gone. It's finished for Bray now.
Yeah, there is no hope.
See the season out. We'll all be happy and let the FAI or whoever sort it out at the end of the season. But for me, Bray's season is dead and buried.
Derry won the end of a battering as well when they went to Cork here, and they went down 5-0. Buckley with a brace for them.
Yeah, as we've heard from Barry Davey here, he feels you can't have any qualms about the tiredness or anything like that. He feels that just beaten by the better side and shambolic defending from Derry yet again.
Yeah, it's same old story, isn't it?
Yeah, same old story.
Broken record, but good win for that for Cork. They'll be
just a point behind Dundalk now.
Yeah, 1 point. Obviously, Dundalk with the game in hand, but you know, it's still 1 point, and it's all to play for.
Yeah, so stick with us, folks. As I said, interview with Aidan Durbin on the way and Joe O'Brien also. We're going to move on to the first division results now. Huge win for UCD at the top, 2-0 over Galway.
Yeah, Derek O'Connor and guy that seems to be getting a few goals at the moment, Yusuf Mahdi. To make it 2-0, that was a big result for UCD.
Yeah, especially with Galway in decent form in recent weeks, and that's a real blow to their playoff hopes. But I think this UCD side, the way they've reacted to losing their top marksman, Georgie Kelly, has been nothing short of sensational. A couple of new players you've mentioned there have come in, they've caught the eye straight away. It's just that production line at UCD. We shouldn't be surprised, but we are. And UCD, for me, this title, it's on the way to the UCD Bowl.
It's not over yet, Kieran. There's plenty to play for still, so I disagree with you on that one.
Someone that might disagree is Drogheda, who had a 2-1 win over Athlone.
Well, that was a bit of a squeeze, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was listening to Aaron Brilley on one of the other shows there, and I think Athlone hit the post late on.
There's other shows.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Yeah, go on, Kieran.
Yeah, hit the post late on. So a good second half performance. He said in the first half, Athlone just sat in a defensive block and it didn't work. Drogheda got all over them and could have killed the game off. But second half, Athlone came out fighting and were unlucky not to get a share of the spoils.
Yeah, Drogheda goals keep coming out from all over. Luke Gallagher and Colm Deasy with the goals. Isaka with the one for Athlone there. Harps and Shelves played out a goalless draw. That does neither team any favours.
The one game I probably did predict right last week, and I said with so much been on the line for either side here, a draw was the most likely one, a cagey draw, which what it was. For me, it kills off Harps' chances of a title, although I never felt personally, as I said on last week's show, I never felt personally they were in the title hunt, most certainly in the playoff and the promotion picture. Shells, it'll all come down to this game on Friday against Longford, and we'll preview that later on. But why do you feel the goals, the Shells, have dried up, John?
Well, I think Davey's lost form, hasn't he? It's been a long time since Davey O'Sullivan's, I can't remember his last goal, but certainly he was on such a red hot streak at the start of the season. And the goals have just dried up for him. So
he obviously had an incredible goal scoring rate for Longford Town, but there was spells during his career there where he did go on these type of runs, and I can remember towards the end of that 2014 league winning season, he certainly went 6 or 7 games where I was scoring. Finally, in that win over Shamrock Rovers B that claimed the title, he got one, and that ended a long streak without goals.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping it shells nil at the weekend anyway. Yeah. But Harps, they're also missing a bit of firepower. The Connor brothers, they've gone now.
They didn't do much all season, John, in all fairness.
No.
And I think the fact they've ended up in the Northern Ireland League probably says a lot about their attitude.
One team that seems to be a bit Jekyll and Hyde, Cabin Teely, they beat Cove 2-0. I know we were talking to Hendo a few weeks ago and he was upbeat, wasn't he? But it's been very disappointing for them.
Their season just never got going, really, did it?
No. And it was Watson and a penalty for Kevin Knight there that sunk Cove. And then finally, the match.
Just final point on Cabo Cove. Is it too late for Cabo to make an assault on the playoffs?
Oh, I think so at this stage, Kieran. Mm. Yeah.
That home form, if only they can carry that into the away games.
They're too inconsistent for me. Yeah, they can have a great win and then they can, you know, they just fall the next match. So to get a bit more consistency, nope. Final match was one we were both at. Longford beating Wexford 3-0. One man that's impressed us this season, Dylan McGlade, he got two. He's playing very well at the moment, isn't he?
He is, but just on this game,
You were disappointed?
I wasn't impressed.
First half, they were flat.
First half was absolutely painful to watch, John. It was the same rubbish that we've seen the last couple of weeks, hoofing the ball up in the air, slow build-up play, never going to break a team down, even a very, very poor side. And that's what Wexford were on the night and have been all season. Second half, Longford finally started to play the ball around the corner, got the first goal through McGlade. He gets another goal, and then Dan O'Reilly gets a deflected effort as well. Longford could have got a couple of more after that, but it was certainly not a performance to write home about.
Kieran, I wanted to ask you about Wexford. What's the future hope for Wexford? For me, they were very, very poor.
I've been accused of going over the top on Wexford a couple of times, but on this show and on social media, for me, I don't see them offering anything at the moment. In terms of off the pitch, they can barely get 100 people in the gate. There doesn't seem to be much going on there. There seems to be a bit of unrest amongst their own fan base too, in terms of the leadership there at the club. I'm not going to go into that again. We can speak about that again at some stage with a Wexford fan maybe. On the field, they seem to be there just to keep the scoreline down. That's what I took away from the game on Saturday. I looked at them and I was like, they were happy to walk off after losing 3-0. We mentioned it very early on in the season about unfit players playing. A couple of players there that were extremely overweight. We're a couple of games from the end of the season now, and they haven't gotten slimmer, put it that way. For me, they're not going to push forward at any stage in the future, and maybe it's time to look at if something else can be done at Wexford.
Such a shame though, after they got promoted the other season and they couldn't keep up there, could it? You know, because it's great to see some
they were a credit in their season in the Premier as Wexford used. They were on an amateur budget and they almost kept themselves in the Premier Division. Probably a lot of that was down to Danny Furlong, but maybe that's unfair too. Look, I don't know where we go with Wexford. For me at the moment, I think something needs to be looked at in the First Division. This is where it all comes down to. We have Athlone and Wexford at the bottom of the First Division every season. No progress, only backward steps. Something needs to be done to try and kickstart them, whether it's re-election being brought back in, whether it's some sort of relegation playoff. Something needs to be done to try and kick a bit of life into these clubs. But look, we'll speak to a man who played in that game on Saturday night. It's the local lad, Aid Irvine. Okay, folks, so it's a pleasure to be joined on the line now by the local sensation. It's, of course, Longford Town FC midfielder, Aid Irvine. Aid, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks for having me, lads.
So, as we mentioned earlier on, myself and John there, we have you on really to preview what is a huge game now at Todd Park on Friday night. Some people are labelling this as a playoff decider between Longford Town and Shelburne. Is that over-egging it, or is it just that crucial now with only a couple of games left in the regular season?
Yeah, it is. We've met a hard for ourselves the last few weeks, but it's a huge game now on Friday night, and if we win, I don't see why we can't crack on and just keep taking it game by game.
Of course, Longford very unlucky to lose in Talca Park earlier in the season, and there was a draw between the two sides at the City Calling, so they're very even contests, they're usually quite exciting. How do you see this one faring out?
I don't see, after back of a good win, after a few results that didn't go our way, we're full of confidence now, so we need to push on now, and if we really want to go up, this is the game where we have to win it. We have to win the games against the team around us.
It was a difficult few weeks for Longford, of course. The defeat in Finn Harps, the home defeat against Cove. Performance is probably very under par in comparison to the rest of the season. It must have been crucial for the team to go and not just beat Wexford, but to get three goals as well in the second half. Must be a great boost to the confidence levels.
Yeah, I think that's what we were really lacking. And I thought myself, personally, the more that we were going to get that many goals in a game, that's what we were missing, really. Like, we kept all the ball in the first half, and in the second half we just came out, we were more decisive, more ruthless.
I suppose in those fixtures against the likes of Finn Harps, against the likes of Cove especially, and even in the first half against Wexford, they're sides that like to sit very, very deep and try and frustrate Longford, whereas Shelburne are a side that probably some people accuse them of being a very direct side, but in terms of opening up, maybe they might be just that bit more open for Longford. Is this maybe a game that might suit the team?
It suits us a lot more than playing the likes of Cove and Finn Harps, as you said, because they sit in deep, and once they go one nil up, it's hard to break them down. It's hard to break them down in general, but with Shelburne, it's all there for us. Like, we can go at the game, we can play our football, and there will be chances.
Of course, it's been a huge breakthrough season for yourself. You did come into the first team towards the end of last season under Neil Fenn. You didn't appear for the first few weeks of this season, but ever since, I think, that fixture in Galway where you amazed everyone with a man and match display against the team at the time who were, everyone was, I suppose, talking up as title winners later down the line. That hasn't materialised, but you must be delighted to have had such a good first season, and I'm sure you're looking to round it off strong now in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I was sort of shocked. I was thrown in against Galway. I was given the chance against Athlone, and then Neil put me in against Galway, and it's down to Neil, really, and Dara. They've shown faith in me, so I just had to repay the favour, but they've been very good to me so far.
I suppose everyone that has been following Longford for many years, like myself, they've been aware of you, and they probably know your story of how you've come through the youth ranks and seen you play for the underage sides, and nobody's really surprised by your prominence this season. But for maybe our listeners from outside of Longford, can you give them maybe just a path, a timeline of yourself in recent years?
So I started off with, there was an under 15 development squad for Longford, and we played 3 games, and I was still playing for my schoolboy team, Meldew, at the time. Where back then we had a very good Meldew team, and then once that was over, I played CCFL under 17s, I think, and we won the CCFL handy enough. We won it, I think it was 6 games to go, and then the First League of Ireland came. First League of Ireland under 17s, and I captained that side that year, and then I signed for the 19s afterwards, and then ever since I trained with the first team once on my first year in 19s, and then I went up the year after, and just I've been training, working hard now, try and get into the team, and I finally did.
Yeah, and of course you've been on the fringes of the Irish underage squads this year as well, having played with one of the domestic based sides.
Yeah, that was a very good experience. You really see good players there. You see the best in Ireland at our age, and it only makes you better playing up there with teams like that. Like, you stand out more. Good players stand out more. So it's a great opportunity for me.
And I suppose you're probably one of the perfect players to ask. You mentioned there you played in the CCFL, which was more of a regionalised, a local kind of division, whereas then you were a member of the team that stepped up and came into the League of Ireland as that underage structure was just kind of finding its feet. So there's a lot of debate at the moment in Irish football about the underage structures and what's the best way to go forward. Do you feel that the League of Ireland structure is the way forward?
Yeah, I do. I feel that it should be at a certain... I think 15s is the lowest it should go, though, because young lads, like 13, 14, should still be enjoying their football and get to know what positions and stuff like that. Like, I think under 13s, you're throwing them into the deep end a bit because they don't really know where they want to play, what positions, or if they even have an interest in football. So it's putting a lot of pressure on young lads going to the League of Ireland that early. But going forward, going 15s, 17s, 19s, I think League of Ireland is the only way, yeah. Even because I've been through it and I noticed it myself, it is the only way.
Yeah, that is a very fair point about maybe players at that age not 100% sure whether they're going to commit to going forward. I suppose when you reach 15, 17s, you've kind of put your a good few years into it at that stage and you're ready to crack on and onto the next level.
That's exactly it, because when under 13, like, a huge part of the game now is physical, like, and under 13s you wouldn't be really going to the gym, but when you're under 15s or under 17s, you'd be going to the gym. And it's just, I think, at the under 13s, you're not developed enough. You still want to enjoy your football, and it's not as much commitment.
And just in terms of gym work, I've spoken to a lot of Longford players this year on the show. Obviously, they seem to mention that quite a lot in terms of Neil Fenn's, the way he sets up his team and what you do during the week and even on your days off. There seems to be a lot of gym work going on there at Longford.
Yeah, there is. I try to put in as much hours as I can because I'm not the biggest. I need to put on size, which I have put on a bit of size, but yeah, it's huge, because in the first division especially, you're fighting for it. Like, it's not like the Premier Division or where it's football. You have to fight, and physicality is huge in the first division especially, well, from what I've played in.
And you had the experience of playing at a couple of Premier grounds already this season, and I think the big one obviously that stands out for the players and for Longford fans was that win in Tallaght, the first Longford Town team to ever beat a senior Shamrock Rovers side in Tallaght, excluding Shamrock Rovers B side. So that must have been an enjoyable experience, and I'm sure you're looking to try and get playing on that stage every week next year.
It was brilliant. We went to Tallaght before the game, and I've never played on a stage like that, and I was just thinking to myself, like, this is a dream. And the way all of us played that night, we deserved to win that game. And it's just hopefully every week now next year, if we keep pushing on, we can really play good football then again next year.
And you've recently signed a new 1.5-year deal with the club, your first professional contract with Longford. You must be delighted with that. And I suppose going forward, what is the plan for Aidan Irvine over the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Oh yeah, I'm thrilled with it. I didn't really expect it, especially a boyhood club, so I'm delighted. And I haven't really thought about the future. I've just thought about playing well and getting results for Longford. There's a lot of people around me talking about stuff, but I haven't thought about anything, just game by game, playing for Longford Town.
And how hard is it to block out all that extra talk, especially when you're one of the only few lads living locally in Longford? I'm sure you're stopped in the street quite a lot. A lot of people know you from around the town, so I'm sure everyone wants to know how you're getting on, and I'm sure you're getting great support, but at the same time, you probably need to block out a certain element of that too.
Yeah, you do, because you don't want your game distracted, but it's good because we're up training every second day in Dublin, and you have the likes of Dean Zambra and Sam, and everyone just keeps you on your feet. Like, they don't let your head get too big or anything like that, and it's good for especially a young lad like me, where I sort of need those talkings to, and Neil, Dara, and everyone on the team does it for me.
And of course, Tristan is the other local based player at the moment. Both of you players have come up, I suppose, in around the same time. It must be good to have another young player there.
Yeah, it is. Especially, it's good to have someone that's close enough. Like, I go up for Tristan every day, and if I ever need to talk to someone, Tristan's there to talk to. If I ever need advice or anything, Tristan knows it. Like, he's been around long enough. Even though he's young, he's been around a lot, and it's good to pick up little things off Tristan.
And in terms of working under Neil Fenn, enjoying the experience?
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable. He knows the game inside and out. Like, he's been with Tottenham, he's been with the top teams in Ireland. Like, he knows the game inside and out, and he's very good at talking. Especially, like, as I said, I'm a young lad, so, like, what I love is I love people talking to me, and he just talks to me, tells me what I do wrong, tells me what I do right. So it's very good. Him and Dara are very good.
And finally, you mentioned the support you've received already. The attendances have picked up massively this year in Longford. There's a much better atmosphere around the place, and I know I'm sure a lot of people saw the photo that went up online from the Section O account during the week, where the entire Longford team came over and got a photo with a couple of lads out of the Section O there. So there seems to be a great bond between the players and the fans this season.
Yeah, I think there has to be, because if you look at the result up in UCD, UCD were supposed to be a home, but even during the game I felt like that we were the home team, because there was no sound from UCD, but all night Section O kept singing. And I think it's big games where we got results out of this year, it's because Section O are a huge part of it, and when people say it's the 12 men, they really are the 12 men.
Yeah, superb stuff. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes for Friday night. It's certainly a huge one for Longford Town.
Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Ed.
Cheers, thank you.
Thanks for that, Ed.
No worries.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
Okay, Kieran, so we're going on to the First Division previews now, and we're going to start with a game that you're going to be at. It's Shells against Longford Town.
You called last week's game against Wexford do or die, win or bust. Longford won eventually. It was a bit of a huff and a puff performance. This game is even bigger again. A draw wouldn't be a disaster for either side. Obviously, it gives the likes of Galway a chance to catch up, but it would keep Longford's hopes alive. It keeps Shells' hopes alive. If Longford lose this game, for me, chance is gone. Bad record or talk in recent times. I'm very nervous about this as a Longford supporter, but the fact Shell's goals have dried up, I'm going to call this one a draw.
Well, I'm going to go for a Shell's win.
You haven't done that in a while.
I know. I just...
In terms of backing against Longford, I mean.
Yeah, I just haven't been overly impressed with Longford. Mm. Dylan McGlade, yeah, he's doing really well.
I might be able to prove a point here against the club.
I just think he's lacking a few bodies at the moment, I think, numbers-wise.
I think from listening to an interview with him after the Wexford game, he seems like a little frustrated. He didn't seem to get the targets he wants.
Right, okay.
That's just what I took from it. He didn't actually say that, but it just seemed to be the way the interview was going. So I agree, we're a couple of bodies short. And obviously just on McGlade as well, he got sent off here the last time. They really wound him up.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to be careful and not fall into that trap again. This is a very, very difficult one for Longford, though.
Yeah, it is. Galway host Cabin Teely. I think that should be a home win, Kieran.
Yeah, as I said a few minutes ago there on the Cabin Teely fixture from the weekend, their home form is very good, but away from home, they just can't seem to reproduce. So I think Galway, a narrow win. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win in this one, John. I haven't been impressed with Galway this season, but they are just picking up results at the moment.
Yeah, Cabo up and down. This is a down weekend for me, so 2-0 to Galway.
You're
with
going
that
2-0,
one.
Okay.
Yeah. Athlone host top of the table UCD. This should be an away win.
Yeah, I know from listening again to Aaron Brilley earlier in the season, I think when he was speaking with ourselves actually, he said that Athlone want to play some sort of role in this season in terms of maybe deciding where the title may go, where playoff positions might go. It would be a shock though if they have any say in stopping UCD. For me, comfortable 3-0 away win for UCD.
Yeah, I agree with an away win with that one. Wexford host Drogheda, and I'm going to go for yet another away win there.
I'm going to be accused of going in way too hard on Wexford this week, but for me, I think Drogheda can absolutely tear this team to shreds. I thought their performance was disgraceful in Longford. I don't want to use that word in terms of trying to be a sensationalist or anything, but I thought they just turned up and had no interest in trying to implement any sort of plan, any sort of attack. I actually can't remember an attack from a Wexford player. So I think Drogheda are going to absolutely tear them to shreds.
Okay. And finally, we have Cove at home to Harps. Long journey.
Yeah, long journey. I think this is similar to Harps' last game. I think it could be a cagey one. The only thing, from a Cove perspective, I think they know themselves their race is run this season. They're not going to make the playoffs. So are their heads going to be down a little bit? They've lost a couple of players as well. McAlavey is gone from Cove.
Decent player, that'd be a loss.
Yeah, I've just seen his tweet during the week that the FAI have blocked his move to Galway United, so he's now without a club and can't play again until next season. So I don't know what the situation is there, but certainly one of the few creative sparks in that Cove team are now gone. They can put in a shift though at home. I think they'll make it difficult for Harps. Could be a draw this one. Don't be surprised if Harps nick it, but I'm going to call it a draw.
Yeah, I'm going for a draw. I think Harps are struggling a bit goal-wise at the moment.
Yeah, I think that could be the deciding factor there.
Moving on, Kieran. We have Dundalk against Bowes. Now, any European slip-ups, do you think, after...
No, I don't think so. But just before we touch on this fixture, you might remember last week when we were giving our previews for that Dundalk-Sligo game that didn't happen. I said I felt that the Dundalk second team could go out and beat Sligo in current form. Just in terms of that game, do you feel it should have gone ahead? Because Sligo have released a statement, 11 weeks without a home league game. I don't think you'll see that in any other league, John. Horrendous fixture scheduling. Very, very financially difficult for a club. And for me, with Dundalk being at home in Europe for the last two games, I don't see a reason why their second string couldn't have gone out and played that game.
Well, we want to give our teams in Europe every chance possible to win. But yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the beast. You have to have a decent-sized squad. And
that's what Dundalk have. They have quality from 1 to 18.
Yeah, but would you have to treat every other team the same?
That's the problem, I feel, with the decision. The FAI just made a blanket rule in terms of last weekend's fixtures that if Dundalk, Rovers, Derry, Cork progressed, those games would be called off. They should have treated it on a case-by-case basis. There's no reason that Dundalk game couldn't have gone ahead. But look, they're going to be playing Bowes this weekend, and I feel Stephen Kenny's side will have more than enough to beat Bowes.
Kieran, I sympathise with Sligo, I really do, but I think that's done for the right reason.
Right, we'll disagree on that one.
Yeah.
But just your prediction on that one?
Dundalk. Bray host Cork. Bray shipped 6 last week.
Yeah, I'm not sure who it was. Just scrolling through Twitter there before the show, someone said that they should be offering ridiculous handicaps on this game because that performance from Bray last time was absolutely horrendous. Some of the defensive mistakes, particularly from Reece Gorman. I think we put the curse on him by getting him on the show last week, but some absolutely horrendous mistakes. It's hard to see the Bray players picking themselves up from that. I think we could be on for a similar scoreline here. Not good for the league.
No, I can't see Bray worrying Cork, to be honest. And yeah, you're right. It could be a demolition, I'm afraid. Rovers host, Rovers against Rovers. Shout out Rovers against Sligo, Kieran.
Oh, it's a tasty fixture, this one. There was plenty of great rivalry between the two clubs when Sligo were on top and challenging for titles. Good cup final between them, the first ever one at the Aviva Stadium. For me, though, Shamrock Rovers, after that result in Sweden, they should be buoyed from that. They need to kick on, as I said, and carry their European form into their league games. Great win down in Waterford as well. And good to see Gary Shaw on the score sheet. Good to see Kyle on the score sheet in Europe. Hopefully them two can start contributing equally now going forward. And I think Shamrock Rovers win this one.
We're going to be talking about Shamrock Rovers for the right reasons goalkeeper-wise for once this season. Yeah. Who does he play in goals?
I'd like to see Bizunu continue, but the good news from that point of view, according to sources online in recent days, Bisounou will commit his future to Shamrock Rovers until he finishes his leave insert next season. And this is the path now that more and more Irish players are taking. I think it's absolutely fantastic that they're not just jumping at the first chance they get to go to England. And we're going to see more and more of that now with the underage structure that's in place. So we criticise the FAI a lot as League of Ireland fans, but they've certainly got this right in terms of that underage setup.
I just hope the signing of Manus doesn't freeze him out, because we've seen a young talent there, given the chance to play. Okay, he's going to make the odd mistake, but it would be good for him and good for the league in general and his development if he was playing first team football.
I don't think Alan Manus was signed to sit on the bench though.
No, I know, but
these are the decisions football managers have to make, and Bradley has been criticised plenty of times on this show and other shows for the goalkeeping situation at Rovers. So, as you said, it's nice to be speaking about it in a positive light now going forward.
It is indeed. Limerick host Waterford. That should be quite an interesting one.
Yeah, if Limerick can bring that first half performance against Pats into this game, they'll certainly put it up to Waterford. But I thought Waterford were very, very unlucky against Shamrock Rovers, as I said. I think the likes of Heary, Akinade, Doofus, they'll be out to right or wrong in terms of that result. I think Waterford could win out, comfortable winners here.
Yeah, I think they'll have way too much for Limerick at the moment, so I'm going for Waterford. And then finally, Derry against St. Pat's Cairn.
Pat's second half performance was impressive against Limerick, although, as we mentioned, they still didn't deserve the 3 points. Limerick should have got a late equaliser in that one, only for a dubious offside flag. At least Conan Byrne has thrown his hat back into the ring in terms of a starting place.
That's what you want as a manager. You drop somebody and he responds.
Yeah, at least
that.
He has a decision to make now. Yeah. Like we're talking about Stephen Bradley there having a decision with goalkeepers. Liam Buckley has a couple of decisions to make now. Yep. I mean, does he start Brennan? Does he start Clifford? Does he start Byrne? Who does he start up front? A couple of interesting things there. And as Gerard Bryan said, they're looking to get a couple of players in before the window closes. They obviously probably won't be ready for this game. But in terms of going forward, if Pats can get a win here, they should kick on a bit in the table. They've been disappointing overall. I feel they have enough firepower to break down a very poor Derry back four. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win on Pats.
Well, different case at Brandywell, I think. I think Derry will be smarting after that last week against Cork. And I think they'll actually beat Pats. I'm with 2-0 Derry.
They beat Pats earlier on in the season in the Brandywell. And you might remember that game that Pats must have missed 5 or 6 chances. It was the most unluckiest defeat I've seen this season.
I remember it well, yeah.
And that was when Derry were absolutely flying at the Brandywell.
Yeah, right.
Things have taken a little turn now, so I think Pats have enough.
Yeah, but Pats haven't been great, Kieran.
But nowhere near the stretch of the imagination have been Pats good enough this season. But Derry, things don't seem right there at the moment, John. And look, we'll round up our preview now by bringing you our interview with the St. Pat's assistant manager, Ger O'Brien. Okay, folks, we're delighted to be joined on the line now by the St. Patrick's Athletics assistant manager and, of course, former player and club legend, Ger O'Brien. Ger, welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Cheers, boys.
So, Ger, obviously huge news regarding the club this week. The council looked to have opted for a separate proposal to the St. Pat's Stadium plans. I know there's huge disappointment around the area and I think in the League of Ireland in general, because they look to be absolutely fantastic plans. And for my opinion, personal opinion, I know that doesn't mean much, but I don't think they were overly ambitious or unrealistic. So it's a real sickener to see them, I suppose, tossed out.
Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating, to be honest with you. We've looked at all the other plans as well, and I think the proposal that we gave as a club wasn't just for the club; it was for the whole area of Inchicore as well. And I think that's the most disappointing thing. Yeah, we're, at this moment in time, it doesn't look like we're going to get the go-ahead to build the stadium, but the plan that has been, you know, put forward by the government and the powers to be is just not going to meet any criteria for the people of Inchicore, and I think that's really disappointing. And unfortunately, there was certainly no over-ambitious things put in their plan. Everything was kind of you know, straightforward, really. We were going to match the number of houses, if not more. We were going to put in shopping facilities. We were going to put in, like, a new plaza. There was going to be cinemas and shopping centres and stuff like that. So it would have created a lot of jobs as well for the area. And it's just a pity. But, you know, as I said, it's disappointing. And it's just something that we're just going to have to wait and see what the next step is.
And I know the club have released a number of statements in recent days asking supporters to constructively put together their criticism of the decision. Do you feel that all hope is lost, or from speaking to people around the club, can there still be hope for this proposal?
I'm unsure, to be honest with you. I think this is
these type of things that happen now in Irish, you know, these type of developments and regeneration projects that could be happening. You know, there's a lot of twists and turns in them, as we well know, from different areas around, from Limerick to Ballymun and other places around the country as well.
Obviously, big win at the weekend ends the very poor run of form. Conan Byrne off the bench with a couple of goals. Did he have a point to prove? And how tough of a decision was it to leave Conan on the bench?
Yeah, listen, to be honest with you, the form has been poor on paper, and there's nobody trying to get away from that. The performances haven't been, and that was the most frustrating thing. You know, we've been leading Dundalk 1-0 here in Inchicore. We've been leading. We've got the 1-1 and hit the bar, and one cleared off the line again against Cork, and non-exaggeration, but we probably could have found ourselves 4 or 5 up against Wales at half time, and we've conceded one from 40 yards in probably their only shot in the whole game. So the form hasn't been too bad. The performance hasn't been too bad. The form itself has been poor, but it was such a big game against Limerick. We needed to try and change something. Unfortunately, Conan was the man that found himself left out. We tried to go with kind of a little bit more, not as much width on the right hand side to let Darren Markey come in off that side, and you know, it didn't really work either, to be honest with you, and we had to change at half time. We took off two of our more experienced players in Killian Brennan and Connor Clifford, and brought on young Jamie Lennon in the middle, and brought Conan back on. And in fairness, there was a lot more energy in the second half, and we were lucky enough that we were able to finish off with a win.
And fair enough, you know, you sometimes see managers waiting till very late in matches to make changes. You know, you could see that things weren't right, so making the subs early, you know, obviously made a big difference in that one.
Yeah, it did, and to be fair, we kind of knew that the balance wasn't right. Whether it was, listen, the Newcastle game on Tuesday was a great spectacle for the club and probably for the league, but unfortunately, you know, it probably took a little bit out of our legs, and we didn't start right. And whether we were playing 4-2-3 or, you know, 4-5-1 with narrow players, it just wasn't right. And after 20 minutes, we probably knew that we had to change it, and we sent the boys to warm up. And there was a spell coming towards the end of the first half that we just said we'd leave it be and get to half time. But to be honest with you, we were thinking about changing halfway through the first half, and credit to Liam, he made, like, it's not easy to take off Killian Brennan and Connor Clifford, you know, 2 year more experienced players at half time, and bring on a 19-year-old midfielder and a player who you've just left out of the team, who's been a regular for 5 or 6 years. And you know, in fairness to Liam, we did it, we made the change, and you know, we told them what way we wanted to approach the second half. And in fairness to them, to the man, you know, we probably could have found ourselves 4 or 5-1 up by the time they had a little bit of a late rally at the end. You know, the keepers made 3 or 4 great saves, and we've missed 1 or 2 really simple chances. But no, there was a lot of relief. As I said, we've had a lot of pressure on us the last few weeks, so we're just delighted to go away with a win.
Yeah, and a trip to Derry this weekend, the Brandywell, they were hammered 5-0 by Cork. You must be wary that you might get a bit of a backlash after that result.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, we were down watching it, and you take your part from it, but listen, it's anyone can go to Cork, you know, and Dundalk and get hit for, you know, so many goals, and that's when you have a week to prepare. So for Derry, you know, and having been a player myself, I would take into consideration what Kenny Shields was saying about, you know, having to travel, you know, home from Belarus, and I've done that journey from Minsk as well. It's not straightforward, and you know, they've had to travel back down. They haven't got any training, and the boys have probably just been, you know, flat, and it's not a place you want to go. You know, if you're going to be flat down to Turner's Cross, but we're under no illusions how difficult the game will be. They're a really good side at home, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Dundalk are the only team to beat them up there twice this year, and obviously Minsk beat them as well. I don't think they've lost anyone else, so the home form is really good. They play a very similar style to us. They move the ball around well. They've got a lot of young players as well, but you know, Kenny's brought in a couple of players during this window, and he's trying to get them into the team to see Kenny, you know, get their season. See can he finish well at the end of the season. So it should be a good game. The last time we played them here in Inchicore was 5-2, I think it might have been, and up there they beat us 2-1 on the night, but it was a cracking game of football, and I expect nothing different this week.
This time last year, JR St. Pat's were in a massive relegation fight. A couple of very, very astute signings in the mid-season break fired life into Pat's in the second half of the season, I think it's fair to say. There's only a couple of days left in this transfer window. Can we expect to see any incomings at Inchicore?
Yeah, we're trying, to be honest with you. We've obviously brought in Brendan Clark and Conor Clifford from Limerick, and to be honest with you, both really good signings. We would have loved to get Brendan back at the beginning of the season, and there was talk of maybe something might have happened then, but it didn't. And obviously Limerick's situation has kind of worked in their favour, because again, we wanted to sign Conor Clifford when he was able to return to play, and I think it might be in April, but unfortunately our budget dictated, we had spoken to him, he was a free agent and we would have loved to get him in, but we couldn't afford him, we couldn't extend the budget. So again, they're two top players, they're two lads with a lot of experience who will bring in a lot of quality to us. But you know, obviously with Christy Fagan out injured, the centre forward position is an area where we've been crying out for probably a couple of years now. We need somebody up front. You look at all the teams above us, you know, the likes of Dan Carr and, you know, Akinadi and, you know, Hoban and Cummins and people like that. They're scoring regularly and, you know, they're big, strong boys and they can bring people into play. And we just don't have that at the moment. And it's probably an area where we need to do better. And we're actively trying to get someone in. But the issue that we found is that, you know, if you're trying to get someone from domestic football, you're trying to look at someone that hasn't been playing, and it's generally your nearest rivals that might have a player for you and they don't want to let them go. And if you're trying to bring someone in from abroad, you're trying to explain to the agent or the player that there's only 10 games left in the season, and then they're probably going to be a free agent again unless we sign them for 18 months, which is it's difficult without kind of knowing them too well. So, you know, we've just got my grandma, Liam, is working hard, and hopefully before the window shuts, you know, that we may just be able to sneak somebody in.
Ger, it's been a pleasure having you on the show once again. Thanks very much for joining us and best wishes for the rest of the season.
Cheers, lads. Appreciate that.
Cheers, Ger.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie. Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.